time it is. It's time for the Shaw's Law Podcast. You know who I am and what I do. Rob Shaw, a.k.a. the Pod God, a.k.a. Harry Potter. Oh, man, if this is your first time here, I really appreciate you taking some time to give this a listen. Shout out to whoever recommended this to you or wherever you saw it on social media. Like, we're going to talk a little bit of hoops. Today is June 2nd. The first game of the NBA Finals is at 9 p.m. tonight, and it's right around 4:15 Eastern time. So this is obviously a little bit later than I would intend to get this to you, but better late than never, but never late is always better. Celtics, Warriors, and we'll just go quickly how we got here with these two teams. The Boston Celtics started off their round one by eliminating the Brooklyn Nets, featuring Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They actually swept the Nets, just got them clean the fuck out of there. And I believe that was the only sweep of the first round. The Nets were the only team to not get a dubski. Yikes, embarrassing, especially if you were like me and may have picked them to win the whole thing, or at least thought they should be in the mix to win the whole thing just based off their talent. The Golden State Warriors in the first round played the Denver Nuggets, and they beat them 4-1. That's the Denver Nuggets that feature league MVP Nikola Jokic. Oh my God, these damn international names. I can say them all the time. Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic. Holy shit, that is going to be so embarrassing. And I'm 110% expecting a text from my boy Adam Williams about that pronunciation slander. Because when I got stuck on Zeljunas Algauskas a couple pods ago, he 100% texted me and was fucking cooking me, and I deserve it. Nikola Jokic. Zeljunas Algauskas. There we go. And the Warriors just look good. Like, they're a tough team. The pieces all fit. I'll go through their playoff matchups, and then I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit. And then the Warriors in the second round got to face... Who did they play in the second round? In the conference semis, the Warriors played... Memphis. Oh, yeah, duh. They played Memphis in what was probably one of the best series of the playoffs until Ja got hurt. We had the Ja missed game winner in game one, and Steph saying they were going to be dancing. Like, that was a good series. The Celtics beat the Milwaukee Bucks in the second round, and that was another really good series. That's one of those ones that almost feels like, hey, whatever team wins this game, this series, is the team that's going to come out of this conference. Last year when it was Bucks, Brooklyn, that felt like the NBA championship, even though it was just for a trip to... It was for a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that felt like the NBA championship. I won't say that Bucks-Celtics felt like the championship. I think that Warriors, Celtics is going to live up to the hype and be really, really good. And these are probably the two best teams for real. I think you could really argue that last year, Brooklyn and Milwaukee were the two best teams, and we saw the championship in the second round. And then in the conference finals, Boston obviously... Oh, and Chris Middleton was out for the Bucks. That is just something to note. And there's injuries every year, and no team is 110% healthy. In Celtics versus the Heat, we had multiple games with... I don't know if I want to call them star players, but important pieces missing. Kyle Lowry missed some games. Tyler Hero missed games. Horford and Marcus Smart were out for game one. Rob Williams didn't look all the way himself. So everybody's banged up, but it is important to note. And I don't want to get deep into these games because they've been over for a while, but the Jimmy Butler just going complete supernova in games in game six in particular, but just establishing himself as like a playoff killer, which we already knew, but there are some people who don't look at the bubble favorably, and he went nuts in the bubble. But then they got swept last year by the Bucks. So that made, I'm sure that gave some people a little feel of, oh, was that bubble magic? Not that Jimmy Butler's not an animal all the time, but hey, was he able to kick it up in these playoffs just a little bit more because it was the bubble? And he's like, nah, like y'all know my body. I'm really like this. And boy, was he like that this playoffs. Whenever he could go, and sometimes when he couldn't go, he was giving it 110. And that just, that kind of attitude just endears you to a player because it just feels like, nah, son absolutely loves the game. And if you know anything about me, people that love the game are always going to get my respect. Like, that's why Pat Coddington is one of my favorite dudes. Just like, he was a much better baseball prospect than he was basketball prospect, but he fucked with hoops more. And like, that is the fastest way to win me over. Hey, I'm better at this. I can make more money at this. I can probably be a bigger star at this, but I don't love it the way I love basketball. Oh, sing directly to my cold little heart. It's like almost the opposite of Ben Simmons. Yep, that's right. I took a jab at Ben Simmons because you goofy motherfuckers can't fool me into thinking that it was really his back the whole time. The whole time? So then why were there rumors that he was coming? Like, y'all just can't fool me with this. I won't talk bad about him because mental health matters. And it really does. But sometimes they're pulling the wool over your eyes. Like, let's just call the spade a spade. I do want to know you guys' thoughts on the last, the Jimmy Butler shot that he shot for the lead. He's not a great three-point shooter, but he'd made some shots. He has Al Horford backpedaling, but not to bring everything back to the Bucks-Nets series last year, but my brain sort of just saw it how, like, KD took that three in overtime. He makes the one to force overtime, but he takes a three the second time. And I think sometimes guys just take the three because they're so exhausted. And I feel like that's definitely the case with Jimmy. He had played the whole game, and he's probably thinking, even if I score here, best case scenario is probably overtime. I don't know if I have another 5 minutes in me. If I bury this, that is a lot of pressure on Boston on the road. This is this Celtics team trying to get over the hump. Because say what you want, this Heat team has been there. Jimmy, Bam, Hero, they were all there in the bubble. Kyle Lowry won a championship with the Raptors. So they've been there. So yes, there's always pressure. But the pressure for the Celtics to get there, I felt was a little bit higher. And it was a road game. So if Jimmy hits that whack Miami crowd still goes crazy, and it's Tatum's never been to the chip, Brown's never been to the chip, it's a rookie head coach, Marcus Smart, that's a lot of pressure. Yosh, my brother, me and him refer to it when we played 2K a lot. We used to say, I'd rather be in a tie than up one or down one, because there's just a little bit more pressure when you're down one as opposed to a tie game. Tie games are house money. Dudes knock down game winners all the time when it's tied. That pressure hits a little bit different when you're down one. Or so up one, down one, not a great situation. I don't love that shot from Jimmy. He had Al Horford backpedaling. He's amazing at getting to the line and drawing fouls. But also at the same time, that dude had 47 on a bad knee in game six and then had to fly from Boston to Miami. And I know they fly first class and stuff like that. I can't imagine flying is fun when your knee fucking hurts. And then he played the whole game. And he's thinking, man, even if I get a layup here, the outcome is overtime and nobody else is really hooping besides me. Tyler Hero is is in his warm up and like he gave it a go because you got to try to give it a go in that situation, but he wasn't ready. So I'm cool with the shot. Is it the best shot? No, but like due to circumstance, I don't think he thought they could beat the Celtics in overtime. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. I don't think he thought they had enough firepower to beat them in OT. Disgusting. Now for the Warriors Celtics, like a lot of fun stuff has come out. I want to say ESPN Stats and Info tweeted that the only team with a winning record since Steve Kerr has become the Warriors head coach is the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, those are bigger wings. Like those are tough matchups for Steph and Klay. Like those big wings are the two big wings and like the jumbo size point guard, because Marcus Smart is 6'4" and, oh man, pause, but built thick. Like he's not like a tall, slender guy. Like he's built sort of stocky. Stocky sounded way less filthy than thick, FYI. Horford and Draymond is probably like a basketball nerd's dream. Like that matchup of two dudes who don't necessarily have to score but impact the game in a million different ways is so fly. And then you have Andrew Wiggins, and I'm gonna pat myself on the back here on this Andrew Wiggins thing. Y'all hear this? That's me cheering myself on. When the Warriors traded for Andrew Wiggins, I did a trade podcast on YouTube, I believe, and I was just all in. Like I firmly believed that this is the culture where Andrew Wiggins could shine. He's like the fourth option on offense behind Steph, Klay, and Jordan Poole. But I even thought as a third option and possibly the fourth most important player behind, at the time, Steph, Klay, and Draymond, I just thought that was the perfect role for him. He's not put into some alpha dog role where he needs to get buckets, because that's who we pegged him as out of high school and out of college. One of those superstar wings. But that turns out that's not who he is. But he's still a really good basketball player. And in this role, I believed he could thrive. And that's what's happening. So shout out to me. Things I'm going to be looking for. I'm very excited to see who matches up with Tatum from the rip. Like, do you send Draymond Green there, like, right from the go? Or is that, my guess is that's probably going to be Wiggins' assignment. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw relatively chalk matchups across the board for game one, at the very least. I wish I'd got this out to you guys earlier, because some of you guys aren't going to hear this before game one. But just thinking about it, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Steph and Marcus Smart match up, and then Jaylen Brown and Klay Thompson, and then Wiggins and Tatum, Draymond, and just regular basic matchups. Or it's the NBA Finals, and maybe there's like a world where, not maybe, there's definitely a world where you can't risk blowing a game because you had the matchups in a poor spot. So you come out swinging right off the jump. And if you think that Draymond Green needs to be on Jason Tatum as much as possible in your Steve Kerr, that's what you do. I'm just excited for it. I'm excited to see pick and rolls between Draymond and Steph that lead to Al Horford switched on to Steph, and how aggressive is Steph? What is Jordan Poole's role? How does he adjust to the big time? I really like that both these teams don't really play anybody that sucks. And I know that's a Verno thing. That's Chris Vernon from the Ringer NBA show with, man, I am drawing a blank on names, with Kevin O'Connor. He talks about not playing dudes that suck. Well, these two teams made it to the championship, and like they really don't have bad rotation guys, honestly. Sometimes the Kuminga minutes can get a little bit too much for me, but that's because he's a rookie. There is a chance that Gary Payton Jr. is back for game two after the injury he sustained in the second round of the playoffs at the hands of Memphis's Dylan Brooks. Grant Williams has made himself a lot of money this offseason. The Celtics do have some guys that like might pop up that I'm not in love with. Like, as much as I like Peyton Pritchard, I'd cut those minutes. Boy, would I cut those minutes. There's just a lot of them. 13 minutes a game for him is probably too much for me. But like, there's good bench guys that like make a difference. Grant Williams, Derek White. Like, these guys come in off the bench and like they really hoop. And then you have Gary Payton, Otto Porter Jr. Like, guys just know their role. This should be a really, really fun basketball series. I'm rooting for this is absolutely wild to me that I'm rooting for the Celtics. And I'm rooting for the Celtics. I've always been a pretty big Jason Tatum guy, even though he went to Duke. Once I was able to like get a good look at him, like Jason Tatum, I was able to recognize, oh nah, he's that deal. So I'd love to see him win. I'm always gonna root for, I'm rooting for everything black to win. So first year head coach, Ime Udoka is black, and I'd love to see him win a championship in that little racist ass city of Boston. I'm trying to get to one of the games in Boston. Shout out to my big bro, Todd. Like, forever looking out for your guy. I'm just super excited to see the basketball here. Hopefully next pod after game one, between games one and two, I can talk about what I saw in game one and the type of adjustments I think will be made in game two. But the biggest thing right now is they're two very good defensive teams. And I think the thing I'm going to be looking at the most is shot profile. Who's giving up threes and where are those threes coming from? Like, everybody knows, hey, you want to concede mid-range jumpers because blah, 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 blah. But this is the highest level of the game and the peak of that with superstars who can shoot the mid-range game. Like, Tatum and Brown are fine there. Steph and Clay, get to the shits. So maybe I want to see what the shot profiles look like, but also who wins the mid-range area? Because my assumption is they're going to just be selling out on not giving up threes because threes hurt so bad. So those are my NBA finals thoughts. And then there's a couple of just quick things. The Lakers hired Darvin Ham as their coach. It's cool seeing players get into fun coaching roles. Personally, I would never want to coach a LeBron James team, especially as a young black coach. Like, I don't want a LeBron James team to be my first gig because there's so much inherent pressure there. And then there's also, it's tougher for black coaches to get second looks. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. So if I'm Darvin Ham and I blow this look as LeBron's coach, it might be a while before I get a second crack at the coaching carousel. And which is so weird because the NBA recycles coaches all the time, but like with black coaches, it's just not nearly to the same level. So it's, and like the pressure of being a LeBron, like I know it's the Lakers and you're coaching LeBron and AD, and in theory you should be a championship level team. Well, they had LeBron and AD this year. They didn't make the playoffs, and they got Frank Vogel right the fuck out the paint. Like, I wish Darvin Ham could take a job and it not be the Lakers' job. like give that to an old white dude who, if something goes wrong, he can bounce back, because the bouncing back just isn't quite the same for black coaches. And sometimes I hate talking about race things in regards to sports, because I think it can make people uncomfortable. I am well aware that a large portion of my audience is white. Listen to me, a large portion of the 35 of you that listen consistently. What the fuck is a large portion of 35, Rob? Shut the fuck up. But nah, jokes aside, like, I know some of you that a lot of my listenership is white. So like talking about race things does get dicey, but also they're conversations that need to be had until they don't. I wanted to talk about this OG Anunoby rumor, but that was when I thought I was going to have Sean and Ian Stansfield, or at least one of them. I don't even like talking Raptors if they're not on, because those guys are fucking experts, and like it's just so good to get their insight on things. So we'll probably double back to this next time we get together. I think that's most things I wanted to talk. Oh, I did want to jump in on Drew Timmy is going back to Gonzaga. And I just think that this is a complete and utter showing of why NIL is so important. Name, image, and likeness saved college basketball from itself. If I ever decide to put pen to paper again, I might write the article about that. Maybe that's something I write in the off season, because Drew Timmy was a star his sophomore year. And then he came back for his junior year. And now he's back for his senior year, and he's going to get to graduate. But I think the choices for him were, yo, I can probably be a G League guy riding on buses to fucking weird places like Fort Wayne, Indiana. Or I can go back to Spokane and be a motherfucking king. One of the best players in college basketball. Preseason All-American, of course. And I can get paid now because name, image, and likeness. I can go down to the Spokane car dealership and be like, yo, you know who I am? You know what this mustache is? I'm Drew Timmy. New whip, and put me on a billboard. It's pretty fly shit. And we're seeing that reverberate through college basketball, because we weren't getting stars like Drew Timmy back, especially because he's not a surefire NBA guy. So why wouldn't I want to go where I'm the fucking man on campus? I'm the man on campus. I'm getting buckets. This is probably the best I'm ever going to play. I play in a conference and for a coach that believes in me, and we're going to be a 2 or 3 seed in the NCAA tournament at worst. And it's my senior year. I'm going fucking nuts. So that is name, image, and likeness saving college basketball once again. This is a relatively short pod. Hopefully with its short length, some of you get to listen to it before before game one of the finals, which is just about 4.5 hours away. Did I math that out right? Yeah, I math that out right. Big dog out here mathing it up. But this has been the Shaw's Law Podcast. And like that, we out.